I'm Joanna Dovin. This is On Crisis, bringing together PR experts, thought leaders, creatives, and CEOs here to start conversations and connect people with real-life stories in crisis communications. Imagine being locked down during the pandemic, and it's been over a year now, with somebody who is abusing you or abusing your children. These days, you can get by without ever leaving your home, which is a nightmare for victims battling domestic abuse or sexual assault. A recent Time report calls domestic abuse within the larger pandemic the shadow pandemic. Backed by data, the reporting points out that U.S. police departments are reporting increases in domestic abuse calls in the double digits. Only when the lockdown restrictions lift will the full scope of its impact on in-home violence be known. This week, we're celebrating International Women's Day and shining the light on a nonprofit victim service agency in one of the most rural parts of America, Pennsylvania's mountain country. Called CAPC, its small but mighty staff, led by Billy Joe Wyant, has been pummeled with steep surges in crisis calls, shelter placement needs, and trauma therapy, as mostly women and children battle domestic abuse and sexual assault. Founded 40 years ago, we talk with Billy Joe about how the pandemic has stretched her agency's resources and how this could be an opportunity to tell their heroic story of helping victims live a safe and healthy life. I was really excited to hear about a program that they brought to their service agency called TIR, or Trauma Incident Reduction Therapy. It's a very progressive way to work with victims to not only help them through things like the PFA process, you know, the band-aid things, getting them safe shelter, helping them through copious paperwork. It's after you deal with the biggest crises within that a victim's experiencing that you then work with the victim and counsel them through their trauma. You actually have them talk about what happened to them and, you know, really relive it, work through those moments. You know, it's kind of analogous to if you're feeling an emotion, you can imagine that emotion, you know, is a tunnel. And in order to get through the emotion, you have to pass through the tunnel and go into the light. But if you stay in that tunnel with the emotion, that's when things like PTSD kick in, and drug abuse and mental health issues kick in, because, you know, all of us are carrying trauma around in ourselves and it's manifesting in some way. To hear how this agency, which for many people is in the middle of nowhere, is doing something so progressive, gives me a lot of hope. And I'm really excited for you guys to hear this.
Billy Joe Wyant, I'm so excited to have you on Crisis today, because we're taking a shift with this episode and getting pretty real. The COVID-19 crisis has impacted everyone, but can you imagine being a single mom in a household with a domestic abuser, and you're on lockdown, and your kids are on lockdown, and your family is avoiding everyone because they're on lockdown? Mm-hmm. What do you do? Where do you go? Where do you turn? So Billy Joe runs CAPC, which is an organization that helps victims of domestic abuse and a lot more, which we'll talk about soon. In one of the most rural areas, really, in the United States, this happens to be two rural counties, Elk and Cameron County, in the middle of Pennsylvania. And the organization is actually doing things to help victims that is unique nationally. And we're going to talk about that today. So, Billy Joe, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. I am so excited.
Awesome. So just tell our audience how long you've been doing, running this organization, maybe how many people you serve, and the top three things you do to help victims.
Well, first of all, I want to let everybody know that we hail out of Elk and Cameron counties in North Pennsylvania, and we have the largest elk herd east of the Mississippi or west of the Mississippi. It's crazy. So we have a lot of, we are extremely rural. I've been with CAPSE for 31 years. I started out as their prevention education coordinator part-time and worked my way through the ranks, and I ended up becoming the executive director in 1994, and I've held that position ever since. And when I started, it was 2 years after the small emergency shelter was opened, and all we provided services to, and I don't want to say all, but we provided services to victims of domestic violence. And over the years, we have grown that to become a comprehensive victim service center that provides an array of services for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, also serious crime victims. And we do another service that you and I are going to talk more about, traumatic incident reduction, which is just something that has taken off and it is helping so many people. So I've been here a very, very long time. The top three things that CAPSE provides to people. First of all, that 24-hour hotline, that is critical, critical. It's a lifeline for people to get that initial crisis intervention and that initial help. And if they need the police, we can help with all of that. The second thing is knowing that we are here for services that are very, very confidential and also free of charge. It doesn't matter what your income level is, you're going to get free confidential services here at CAPSE. I also think that number three is, and it's hard to put them in like a 1, 2, and 3 order, but also the availability of a safe place for somebody to stay, even if it's a short period of time until they're able to figure out what they need. And with that, we also can assist with and provide guidance for protection from abuse orders. So I think those are the top three things, but there are so many other things that we do. And over the past year, year and a few months, our services, because of COVID, have just exploded and the need has tripled at least.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for that. I mean, how many, on an annual basis, average, how many victims are you helping?
Well, I recently, and I don't have these numbers in front of me, but I can tell you right now, the hotline alone, our incoming calls from July 1 of this year, 2020, through the end of December, we had 708 incoming calls, or over, or roughly around there. I'm going by memory. That is the first 6 months of our fiscal year. And we saw that many the previous 2 years, 12 months. I mean, so we're seeing already what we saw last year in the first 6 months. Domestic violence, sexual assault, the traumatic incident reduction, all have probably doubled since last year. So at the end of the year, when we compile our stats, we will easily have seen or talked to over 2,000 clients. Victims. Then include with that, we run the victim witness program, which just so folks who are listening to this podcast realize, we also provide full services to all crime victims in Elk and Cameron counties, including court accompaniment, helping them with their crime victims' compensation, also keeping them apprised of what's going on in court hearings. There is so much that goes with doing all of that to help victims. All at the same time, we all work in a trauma-informed atmosphere. So we are very trauma-informed. We understand the trauma piece. We understand what people are going through. So it makes for a much more holistic experience.
I mean, So you're there to help, and how many, and so has your staff, so your needs have, just going on here, whoops, sorry about that, audience. So your needs have more than doubled, okay? Calls have more than doubled, sexual assault has more than doubled, all that. Has your staff, have you been able to increase staff?
Joanna, no, and that is one of the great needs that we have at CAPSE. Currently, no, we do not have enough staff to truly maintain what we're doing. I mean, we're doing the best we can, and we are currently in conversation about that, But that is something that all, I believe, victim services struggle with. And I can only speak for victim services across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, not anywhere else. But I think for the majority of us in a rural setting, especially, we've always been underfunded on a state level and many times on a federal level. And compared to what the services that we provide are just critical. We are essential services. Just like law enforcement and many others, because we truly save lives.
Absolutely. And what, you know, and so our audience understands, we engaged with your organization 6 months ago, maybe a little more.
Yes.
Because you recognize that in this time of crisis where everyone is now virtual, one way you can have more of an impact on communicating how you can help people was to have updated owned media channels. So a website that better communicated your services and could connect people with what they need on the site to perhaps, you know, reduce your call volume or just, you know, get people what they need faster. And then social media, informing people of what you do, you know, in real time and getting the stats together, getting the information out there. Let's talk about, I mean, most organizations like yours, I would assume, during this really busy time, haven't been able to dedicate the time to focus on the importance of communication, yet you guys did. Why was that important to you?
Well, it was really important because when we engaged in a strategic plan, one of the needs that came to the forefront for us almost immediately was the fact that we were still operating all components of CAPSE, including our website, which was not updated, and it was very archaic, very hard to maneuver. Our social media, our CAPSE Facebook was just, I did it within maybe 30 minutes one day, and we just did the best we could. We realized we were not meeting everybody in the area. So especially the younger folks, the younger generation, because they don't read the newspaper like we all do. They don't listen to radio the way we do. I mean, a lot do, but then again, there's that population that doesn't. Well, by engaging with Primo, it has been a phenomenal experience and one that CAPSE is going to continue with, because the people that comment on the beautiful website and how easy it is for folks to navigate it, and how easy it is for them to garnish that information without having to spend 2 hours reading. They can get it. It's right there. I think that was just paramount, especially with COVID, because right now we are seeing people in person, but we are seeing a lot of people virtually, on the phone, via social media, sometimes even with instant messenger. And we're seeing people that will say, I was into your website and I took a look and I saw some of the services you provide and I read about those. So I've also seen and talked with our staff members saying that they spend more time working with folks on what their needs are instead of taking that extra time. And let's remember, a lot of times, especially on the phone, a victim may not have a lot of time to talk. It might be when the abuser's not there, sleeping out of the apartment or house. So you've already gotten that. They already know what they want. They know what services we provide. We can just start right there. So it's really been great.
And I want to commend you because you recognize the need and, you know, you've been a pleasure to work with. And
oh, thank you.
One thing that we love about certain clients, and there's few, unfortunately, I have to admit, they're few and far between, is the clients that entrust us to say, here's what you need and let us do the work.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, one of my perspectives on that is, you know, especially for your victims that are, let's say, more millennial,
yeah,
when they're engaging with your social media or seeing it through, you know, boosted posts, mm-hmm. You know, because you know how social media works these days, you have to pay to play many times,
yeah.
Or go into the website. The website is going to feel relatable to them if it looks modern and up to date. And then that positive connotation they're going to have with the organization is going to impact their first impression. It's the first impression, right? And of course,
absolutely,
that could be the first impression too. So, you know, one thing that is also really important is that you guys have engaged in efforts to seek more donations, right?
Yes.
Because your needs are so, but to get the donations, step one, right? We have to communicate what the heck's going on. Let's talk about that. So we have an increased need, but give us some anecdotes. Like what are you seeing in your communities? What are some ahas of COVID? We're all going to assume two things. We're going to assume there's an increase in mental health issues, right? And it almost seems like it doesn't matter where you are. We know that 2020, the CDC reported it is going to be the largest, death record for overdoses for drugs and alcohol in recorded history. That data will come out soon. That's what they're seeing right now. That's where it's trending. Drugs, alcohol, mental health. But I've not really read much about domestic abuse. You'd assume that's kind of going and pushing forward as well. Tell our audience, really, what's going on inside your community?
Well, the first thing that comes, as you were saying that, the thing that popped right into my mind was the drastic increase in the number of protection from abuse orders that people are calling us or stopping. We're getting a lot of people that they see a few cars here because we do stagger staff for safety reasons because of COVID, but we will have walk-ins and people that call. We're averaging 7 to 14 petitions for a protection from abuse order a week. That's a 5-day week, work week. That's a lot for two counties that total about 35,000 people total in both counties together. That's a lot. Plus, we have to take into consideration while we're trying to provide these services and help folks that we have to be on top of knowing how are the other helping agencies operating? Are they remote? Are they face-to-face? Are they staggered hours, staggered staff? It has been a true game to try to keep up with all of this. Staff has done a phenomenal job. I'm also very grateful that our counties play well together. We really do. We collaborate. Well, in order to survive over the years, we've had to. But it is a game every day because the bottom line is you have to make sure you're safe. You have to just make sure. And as you talk, Joanna, I've noticed again, I don't have any direct numbers, but over just in the past few days, I've seen so many deaths of younger people, and everyone knows everyone here in our area, but they've all been overdoses, drug overdoses, and it's sad.
Heroin, is there
a
common drugs at heroin?
We have meth is real bad right now here. Not so, the heroin's kind of waned. We have a lot with the methamphetamines.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. That meth.
Yes.
So that the three dangers of the pandemic with fatal overdoses is the fentanyl that's being laced in the heroin.
Yes.
Which is more deadly. The increase in availability of methamphetamines. And then of course, alcohol. Right. And the problem is when you're isolated and not held accountable by family, friends, and being out there in the community. And when you go out, you're hiding.
Yes.
You're hiding behind a mask, right? Wow. How much more vulnerable you become. And these poor kids, I mean, you think about the kids. So you're seeing more deaths. And so I want to talk about, you know, I'm really big into wellness and health and nutrition in my personal life. And if I could one day become a wellness expert, maybe I'll make a pivot, but that's not coming anytime soon. I need my own house in order first, right? My own wellness house in order. But, you know, I've been no stranger to trauma myself. You know, I have in my own personal family history, a lot of what you would call ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, there's drug addiction in my family. Mm-hmm. There's alcoholism in my family. And while I don't carry the addictive gene, thank God, and have avoided that, I've had to deal with a lot of trauma that lives in your body, that lives everywhere. And I still deal with that. Recently, I've done some reading into sort of how you can, you know, see the light and, you know, understand how you've developed coping patterns when you've had trauma that might not be serving you into your adulthood or serving your children.
Yeah.
And so I was really interested to see that you're one of the only organizations in the entire nation that offers a program called Trauma Incident Reduction, TIR. Yes. And so I started reading about it. You know, you think of something like this happening in a very progressive, you know, hippie city, because TIR, I don't explain it better than me, but you literally are meeting with a trained specialist, mm-hmm. that's within your organization.
Yes.
And the victim is reliving the trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
Communicating, yes. Going through it, reliving it, not bearing it, not saying, here's an antidepressant, here's a prescription, but we're gonna relive that trauma in order to be able to feel it and then put it to bed, right? So talk to me about, okay, first of all, why did you decide to start offering this? And then let's talk about what it is, why you decided to start offering it, and what impact you're seeing.
Well, just to clarify, CAPSI is, there are some other folks out there doing TIR, traumatic incident reduction. Actually, the trainer that we utilize, Marion Volkman out of Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan, they're the top. They are the premier trainers, and they are the ones that actually run the TIR agency. They train worldwide. So there are people trained in Australia, Africa, you name it. Matter of fact, I just spoke with via Zoom a woman from South Africa who just recently was trained, looked us up on, found us on our CAPSI website and reached out, and we made a connection there. But not to digress any further with that.
Right. Maybe you can tell her you want to go to South Africa and offer some personal training. if you would like Primo to come with you, we'll do a Facebook Live.
That would be great. But the TIR is something that CAPSI can tout that we are the only ones in the United States that we have a number of us trained in 5 different levels of techniques. Plus now we have 2 levels of ability enhancement, which you have to do after you're done with some of your other curriculum. And we do that. We don't charge. Some people charge on a sliding scale. It's up to them individually. But CAPSI does not charge. We provide it as part of our CAPSI services. And all of our funding sources realize that this is, when we learned all this, it's extra tools for our toolbox. So we're not actually veering away too much of what we've already done when it comes to that trauma-informed counseling and empowerment piece. So that's the reason why they tout us. And on the TIR website, TIR.org, you can get on that and see that we're listed as a nonprofit that provides this. How I got to learn about this was through one of our local mental health providers. She is one of the directors for a local, one of the children's services. she and another person went to a regional meeting and they were talking to another to appear at that meeting. And they were talking about really wanting to get some trauma-based services, some real good trauma work for children and adults in Elk and Cameron counties. So this woman had said, you need to go see some folks. And she mentioned this agency, and I believe it's called Parkside, but don't quote me on that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's in a different county in Pennsylvania. So as a result, what we did was we made an appointment to go visit. And when I got there, it was myself, the director from the Elk and Cameron County Children and Youth Agency, and the administrator for our local Cameron and Elk County mental or behavioral health system. We wanted to go see about all of this and what we could do for Elk and Cameron. Now, this is probably going back to like 2014, something like that. We got in a car, hopped on Interstate 80 and went due west. Mm-hmm. And we got there and met with these wonderful people, and we were talking with them and they were talking to us about all these wonderful things they did. And one of the gentlemen took a little brochure and he said to us, you folks do victim services. He said, I want to tell you, this is a little pamphlet that can change somebody's life. All you need to do to perform a miracle and help somebody totally eliminate their trauma is what you learn with this, you can put in the back of a index card and you will change somebody's life. Well, I hung on to that. And I thought, you know what? I want to know more about that. Mm-hmm. So we come back here, and long story short, I talked to him. I got his card and I called him back and I said, can you tell me some more about this? And he started explaining to me, and he said, the premier trainer for this is Marion Volkman, and she hails out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. I said, I'm going to look her up and call her. And I literally Googled her and called her on the phone. And I said, Ms. Volkman, this is Billy Joe Wyant. I'm the executive director of CAPSE. I talked to Harry Nelson, who's the gentleman that I spoke with. She said, Harry, I know Harry very well. And then the rest is history. I wrote some local grants from some of our local foundations. And over a course of a number of years, I had these trainings. I had all, like most of us, trained in it. And then I'm still working with Marion. I just had a Zoom call with her on Monday. And we're still talking about her coming back here and doing some other community trainings and some more things. And now they're doing everything online. So the virtual trainings are not as good as the in-person, but it's just a wonderful journey. And all of our funding sources, they support us, and it's just great. I'd love to see more people get involved and do it.
So let's tell our audience, like, let's dive into, so you said, basically, it's doing TIR can change someone's life. It's
yes.
Like performing a miracle. It's erasing the trauma. It's getting rid of the trauma. What do you do? How do you do it?
Well, and I'm going to explain this. I mean, there's a lot more to it.
Give us the two-minute version.
The two-minute version is the person who is doing it, who is coming for services.
By the way, maybe you can give an example. Of course, not giving names. If there's a situation within your organization of somebody who had a specific trauma, mm-hmm. maybe you can sort of tell it. Maybe in a storytelling way, it might.
Okay. It wasn't me personally. It was one of our staff who actually does all of the TIR right now. She had a gentleman hear about us through newspaper articles and some different things that we had done on the radio, local radio stations, about TIR to start promoting it. And this guy called and said he would like to know more about it. So he came and talked to Tiffany and our counselor. And there is this, we do like a little preview to let folks know what to expect and everything. And as a result, he decided he wanted to try this because he, as a child, witnessed heard a gunshot go off in his house. And he heard his grandmother she attempted suicide, but she did not complete. And as a small child, he witnessed that. Now that's horrific trauma. So over the years, what happens is you don't know how to deal with that, and you don't remember it all because your memories become so fragmented because of the trauma in your body trying to protect itself. This is with any type, with a victim of rape, you know, so I'm kind of explaining. And then for a while you're all right because you don't think about it. And then something will trigger you. It could be a smell. It could be a taste. It could be something that you saw. It could be a tone of someone's voice, anything. And those traumatic experiences come to the forefront. And a lot of people start having these fragmented flashbacks, or they remember it. They start to do things like self-medicate, alcohol, drugs, promiscuous behavior.
Before they start to self-medicate, what happens in the body? I mean, before they say, is it when the memories in a fragmented way start to resurface in the brain?
Yeah.
Then the person, they just feel out of control. What's the step before this?
Well, you're going to be seeing that with anybody that's traumatized way before they even remember. It's kids in school that everybody believes are unruly, or the kids that are always picking fights, or those kids, you know, when I hear kids are bullying, thing is, what happened to that child? Why is that child lashing out? They're crying for help is what they're doing. So with TIR, when someone's ready, if they choose to do it, they are then going to work with their facilitator, one of the counselors here who's trained in it. And for instance, that person then is going to take that. We work with them to find out what they want to work on. And we take that, and it's almost like a movie clip. And they're going to say, I want to start here and I want to end there. And then we hardly say anything. That person continues to view that situation, that trauma, or that traumatic experience, and we will go over it and over it. And a person will know, and you'll see, they'll come to what we call an end point. And when that end point occurs, that has no feeling. There's no reaction, no feeling left. You'll never forget it, but it's not going to affect you like it used to.
Live in your body. It's like,
it won't live in your body.
Not being stuck in the tunnel. It's like passing through the tunnel and now you're
exactly
out.
Perfect way to explain that. That was a perfect analogy. Yes. We have been doing it here at CAPSI since 2015. And I am telling you, I have seen remarkable results, and, it's just unbelievable, And we don't ever put a time limit on it. It is as long as it takes. We have had people come here and it only takes half hour to an hour. Some people, one or two passes through and they're like, I feel great. Then there are other.
And it's almost like, you know, wow, many of these people finally have somebody that wants to listen to them and wants to hear their stories.
Yes.
You know, a lot of ways that I myself organically, just naturally have tried to pass through. You never get over your traumas. You pass through them, right? They're always going to be there, but you have to pass through them. You can't let them sit. Is by just like talking, right?
Yes.
Communicating. But sometimes that's hard because if you don't have somebody with whom you're talking that is objective, then you might color the story a little bit, right? You might not tell the whole story. You might only tell parts of it. And I think that's the importance of having an actual, you know, a counselor that's gone through all five steps of training, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
So how are your counselors seeing, is there an increase since COVID of people wanting TIR? I mean, first of all, if you could give everyone TIR, I'm sure you would, but you only have limited resources until we can get you more money raised, right?
And we're working on that.
But do you flag certain people, say you need TIR, here's why you need it? Or like, how is it, how are you getting these TIR referrals? And what is your wait time now? Has it increased COVID?
Word travels fast in a small community. So I think part of it is word of mouth. Mm-hmm. So-and-so will say, oh my gosh, this changed my life. And now we're seeing more and more people who aren't reluctant to do it, because once somebody around in our community will, you know, try that and it worked for them and it didn't hurt and it was bad, and then they share with somebody else, that other person wants to also try it. But anybody that comes here, we are trained at CAPSI to, first of all, assess their needs. So if I have somebody in here that is really in a dangerous situation and they, for instance, need a protection order, we are not going to talk about TIR or ongoing counseling until that emergency, that person's safe, I should say. But we always offer it in the handouts that we provide, in on our website, and just talking to somebody on the phone. When you start talking, just somebody that wants to vent and they've had long-term trauma or long-term victimization. My example quickly is a couple nights ago, I spoke with one of, in a neighboring county. We had one of their legal advocates called me, has known me forever, and just called me and said, I want to run some things by you with a client that I think is going to be coming to your county. Without mentioning names, we were kind of prepping for this person to come talk to us and work with us so that this person didn't end their services. In the meantime, she starts telling me about a family member that, and all they were working with this family member, because the family member was traumatized and it has been a horrendous situation and going on. At that time is when I said, if you want, we do traumatic incident reduction too. So if you would like to know more about that, let me know. Sometimes that's all it takes. Well, the next day that woman actually texted me and said, please, Billy Joe, let me know more about that. Can we talk? So that's kind of how we bring it up. We don't force anybody, mm-hmm. but it's an option. It's an option just like the other options. And also there are some people where we don't even want to bring that up because they may not be ready. But as we build that trust and start that relationship with somebody in that counseling arena, then you then are able to say, an option you have, you know, is to try this someday if you want, and I can give you some information on it. And I think, Joanna, one of the great things was the takeaway, the collateral that Primo did for us, the front and back, because it gives you, again, it tells you everything about that TIR, that it really helps people. Mm-hmm. And then they're ready and they don't feel so anxious, like they don't know what to expect.
Are you guys collecting any data on the people who have completed TIR and the sort of, I don't want to say the word relapse, but them having to come back to CAPSI for more services? Like in other words, if it's through healing their trauma,
yeah,
limiting the number of exposures they're going to have to more trauma.
We haven't locally, we have a data collection system that we must use because of some of our funding sources, but on that international level, they are actually the TIR folks, Marion Volkman and her gang. They're all working on that right now, and they are actually doing an international. One of the premier trainers in England, I believe that gentleman's starting to pull together a data collection system. So hopefully we can be a part of that. There is a book of research on TIR. I actually have a copy, and I use a lot of it for grants that I write, because it's just phenomenal. And the research that they've done already, and they actually did some focus groups and things, including female inmates. And it's interesting to read. So that's out there and it's available. But it's good stuff. It really is. And believe me, with as busy as we are and what we do here, if it's something we would have tried and it was not helping or it was being harmful to someone, I would have stopped it right away.
Yeah. That's part of why you're good at what your job is. You can feel impact.
Yes.
You can feel the impact. So we don't have much time. I want to ask you three questions.
Yes.
And kind of putting you on the spot. And sort of answer this sort of in the perspective of the past year, you know, of the crisis we've been in with the global pandemic.
Sure.
What is one thing that your organization has been most grateful for this year?
Boy, there's so many. I think that I'm going to say this, and not just because you're on here with me, but I think I am so grateful for Primo and also the Hill Group, the consulting firm that we worked with, because if it wouldn't be for both of you, CAPSI would never have been in the position to be able to do what we are doing right now with the current staff and be able to help all the people that we're helping. We couldn't have done it without you. And I'm not just saying that because you're sitting here with me. I truly mean that. Thank you.
Well, this is why, this truly is why I do what I do, because, you know, the organizations like CAPSI that are doing all the important, really, really hard work, mm-hmm. You don't have time to tell your story. And if you don't tell your story, then you're not going to impact as many people, but you're busy. You're grinding every day, and not for nothing, but you and all of your staff, you go through trauma. So there's an aspect of trauma that you deal with every day in your job. My mom was a social worker.
Yeah.
Worked in Auberly, a group home with, you know, taking care of kids that, and you know, the system, trust me, they don't care.
Yes.
You're a kid, you're going with your mom and dad unless literally your life is in danger.
Yes. Right?
So she was taking care of these kids that I can't even imagine the trauma. But yeah, I mean, she took that home with her. How couldn't you? But thank you. Two more questions. Looking at the entire sphere of social services that you guys are all helping to coordinate on behalf of victims, what's one thing that really frustrates you that if you had a magic wand, you would change?
The red tape and the bureaucracy, the amount of paperwork, the redundant, repetitive use. I mean, it's literally a lot of what we have to do just to keep our funds coming in. It is just, it's senseless. It really is. To have a more streamlined way to do things. No one funding source is like the other. Everyone has to be different. And it's so difficult. It's so difficult. And the timeframes, for instance, CAPSI has the opportunity to get some additional housing money for victims in both counties, Elk and Cameron counties, but the hoops we must jump through to do that. And it's due on Tuesday. And right. I received the information yesterday. So it's, if you want to do it, you better get on the ball and do it. If not, we're going to leave you in the dust.
Well, if you need help, let me know, Marissa.
Application.
Yeah, I can. Well, I know what you're saying with the red tape.
Yes.
Okay. Last question. What's one lesson that you've learned through the pandemic that your organization has learned? What's something how has your perspective maybe changed a little bit?
Boy, I always say this about the work we do, but I think I can say it about the pandemic. We truly, through this pandemic, can see the best in people and the worst in people. It just has brought to the forefront
both extremes.
Oh yes, the extremes are, it's just unbelievable. And the severity of the abuse. I thought maybe a number of years ago when we always had, you know, conversations with staff and they would say, you know, there's so much violence on TV, it's numbed us all, you know, we're so numb to all of this. Mm-hmm. But now what we're seeing and the situations we're experiencing, plus having to, again, figure out, when is this office open? When can this office see somebody? How can we keep so-and-so safe until this office can see them? It's just jumping hoops constantly. So I think that that really brought it to the forefront. And I don't know if this should be positive. I mean, I'm looking at it that there are more people who are seeking help. And I think the pandemic possibly brought folks to us, which I'm glad, because they're getting the help that they need. So we want to be sure that we're stable and strong and able to grow and continue to meet those needs. So again, that's why I say, coming back full circle, I know that we'd never be where we are right here without you at Primo and also the Hill Group. We couldn't have done it. And I thank you so much for that, Joanna.
Oh my gosh. Well, you're welcome. And I mean, I feel like you're the one doing the work here. You know what? I could have you on for a longer amount of time. We could talk more about TIR and just some of the things you're seeing in your community.
Sure.
Like, seeing the picture, I feel like, you know, when you read most newspapers, national news, or see national TV news stories, so much focus is on urban Black communities. And that should be a focus.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think there's enough focus on the other side of the less resourced world in America, and that's the rural whites, you know. And I hate to, I'm not trying to be polarizing, but I think that the conversation needs to happen, that the pandemic is hurting a large swath of people, and we all paying attention to all of them. So I'm going to be pushing for some national media on this and leveraging this podcast to make people listen. I'd love to have you on again soon. And again, thank you for all that you do.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care, Joanna.
Thank you.